Well, if you have a Bible, open it up to the centerpiece of the book of Matthew, the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 16. And so, and I said, how many of you have you seen a movie, and if you miss the first 5, 6, 7 minutes of the movie, you will be in question about the rest of the movie, because many times in many movies they will show about a 5, 6, 7 minute scene which will be about the end or the climax of the movie, and then they'll start out 5 years earlier.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen them do that? And if you miss that first segment of the, then you get kind of lost with the rest of the movie. Have you ever had that experience?
Never.
Yeah, all liars have their part in the lake. Anybody that's a movie buff sees that. And so I told that story because that's kind of how the Bible is. If you misunderstand the introduction, which lays the foundation for the rest of the story, then you really will miss the rest of the story. And I know that that's what's happened for all of us. And it's happened to us because of religious propaganda. And the religious propaganda took a book that was a miracle about the mystery of God incarnate in physical form and tried to make all of that a historical thing. And so as a result of that, every one of us, we reap the repercussions of that idea. And we don't realize it, and we don't get it. But once you get the first segment, I would say, you know, I use that little illustration about a movie. Once you get that first section, short or whatever, then the rest of the movie begins to come together in pieces like a puzzle. But if you don't have those very important pieces of the puzzle, which are called keys, that's what they're called, keys. It tells you in Luke chapter 11 that the Pharisees, the Sadducees, as teachers, I could just say the religious leaders, took away the keys because they didn't want to enter, nor did they want us to enter into the mysteries. And so,
how can we get away from the obvious duality in God incarnating in us when He didn't incarnate in us? He is us. He was us. He is all that is. All that is, period. If you have Him incarnating in us, that's a form of duality which denies the basis of unity.
Okay, it does when we look at it from a physical perspective, but when you look at it from a unified perspective of God. And we did this, we drew the straight line, you know, flat line. They said, well, they're dead. And here's what we were looking for. And so this idea of a wave promotes duality, because you can't have a physical dimension without a positive and a negative, without electricity and magnetism. However, God is both and simultaneously in a unified effort. And so the question that George is asking probably is at the core of all of us thinking that we are not God.
Right.
If you listen to the question George is asking, every one of us are the product of the seduction of the duality without understanding that I am you and you are me. That's a difficult thing for us to grasp and to understand. It's like the Old Testament uses a phrase or an analogy, and God says, I only have one son, Israel. Now that, and to, again, I'd say Israel. And I break that name down because if you actually look at it, that's the way it's broken down. It's like this energy that is God breaks itself down into this wave form, which produces a material world. And a material world functions in this wave form. But the eternal doesn't. The eternal is what we call a straight line simply because it is. It never was, and it won't, will be. It just is. That's hard for us because this is was, this is will be. Was, will be. That's how sine wave works. That's how electrical magnetism in what we would call duality. Now, if we could understand duality is the manifestation of unity, how could that possibly be? It's not divided. Just because it's dual doesn't mean it has to be divided. Division is where we get into religion. And religion sells us that idea and that concept that we are, since we're dual, we have to be divided. But we don't. We're not. We can be united. So I told you that story just a minute ago about the introduction, getting the introduction. It's just like Jesus said in Matthew 5 when he talks about building your house on, Matthew 7. He talks about building your house on the sand, Matthew 8. It just kept coming in the computer banging, Matthew 8. He said you can build your house on a rock or you can build it on sand. Either way, he did say, time, that's duality, comes. And what does it bring? It brings winds and storms. It brings hard times and good times. It brings hills and valleys. That's of necessity because that's how the physical world works. It works that way. So I said all of that because I want to say something in just a minute about the introduction that we have in the Bible, and we misunderstand that. If we grasp it, if we can get that, it helps us as we begin to see the story as it unfolds. Okay? So, Matthew 16 is pretty much the centerpiece of the Gospel of Matthew. So, the first 15 chapters build up to chapter 16, and then chapter 16 begins to give you the core, the root, the meat of the context of the book, and then chapter 17 through 28 is how it plays out. And so Matthew is also Hebraic, as far as you go back and you look, even though it's written in Greek, it's dressed in Greek dress. It's Hebraic. It's the most Hebraic of the Gospels, okay? They don't have a clue who wrote the original book of Matthew. It wasn't Matthew. They gave it that name. So I want you to see this with me, and I'm going to use what I would call types and shadows or metaphors, numbers, gematria, astrology, all the things that make up the Scripture. Without any of those things I just said, you would not have the Scripture. The Scripture is based off all of those things I just said. Gematria, astrology, types, shadows, metaphors, symbols. And if we don't understand those things, and we don't, we won't understand the Bible. But I would say that we don't understand those things because we have been taught against them. We've been taught that they aren't a vital part of what we should have. But yet, when you get to the real root of the issue, you realize those are the vital things that you must have. Because if you don't understand them, the Bible is a symbolic book. And if you don't understand the symbols, if you can't read the signs, you can't go where the signs are pointing. Now, that shouldn't be rocket science right there. It should be. I mean, you know, today you can find ways or Google Map or whatever you got and follow your map, but nevertheless you have to follow the sign to get you there. So wherever you're going, you have to follow the sign. The sign is the pointer to tell you how to go. And so when you can't read the sign, if Abraham and Sarah are signs, if they are a pointer, they're pointing to something, but yet you don't think they're a sign or you don't even recognize them as a sign, you can't recognize what they point to. Do you understand what I'm saying? And that's true with all of the characters. If you don't understand that they are signs pointing to something, then you won't understand what the something is they're pointing to. Even if you had it or if you come up and you got it. So, Matthew 16, verse 13, it says, when Jesus came into the coasts of Caesarea Philippi, and so I would just say, pause, time out right there. Just put your thinker on pause, and I want to get into the way you think, because here's how we think. We're taught to think like this. When Jesus came to the coasts of Caesarea Philippi, here's what we would have in our mind. He's on a boat, he's in the water, and he's coming to the shore. So when you see the word coast, you would automatically think of the word shore or the sandy beach. That's what you think. That's what you hear in your mind. That's not what this passage actually says when it talks about this particular word coast. It's the word meros. And the word meros actually means a portion or an allotment. So in other words, if someone has given you an allotment, in other words, let's say that your parents left you a $10 million state, and in that $10 million state, you were allotted a certain thing. Would you partake of that allotment? Unless you were a fool, you would. Well, most of us are fools because we have an allotment, but we don't understand our portion. So we don't know how to take part of our portion. Now, there is an allotment that he's referring to here that has to do with physical. Because he's using a sign here. And that sign is Caesarea Philippi. And so if you were to do the study, or if you were to do the research to see what does Caesarea Philippi mean, you're thinking of a city or a place or a town somewhere, right? The city places and towns aren't necessarily referring to, you know, like Jericho. When Joshua come into Jericho, Jericho wasn't even a city when that story was written. So he couldn't be coming to a town. 700 years later, after that story was written, then there was a little community that became known as Jericho. So then they were using the word Jericho not to describe a city that hadn't been found yet, right? They ain't found it. They haven't. No, they haven't. Why would that be? It was a sign pointing to things. So if we don't understand what it's pointing to or understand what it's talking about, and for instance, Caesarea Philippi in this particular place, it means the temporal or personal, it's talking about your temporary. Can you understand temporal? Temporary. Everything in the physical world is temporal or temporary. It's always fleeting, always changing. We want to always make it permanent. In other words, this is my situation today. It's come to stay. No, it hadn't. It's just temporal. And that's what the word Caesarea Philippi means. And Jesus is saying, look, you've come to this place of your allotment. This is something that's been apportioned to you in the physical world. You have been apportioned this ability in the physical world to temporally, carnally look at it and assess it. It's not true. It just looks like it is. I hope y'all are getting what I'm saying. Your situation, the way it is at this particular moment from a physical perspective, is just like this chart of waxing and waning. It's not the way that it necessarily has to be. You get to determine what it will be. And if you choose that, however how the temporal is showing it to you with its carnal definition, if you choose this is the way it's going to be, that's how it'll be measured to you. That's what Jesus says. Ever how you meet it, ever how you measure it, that's how it'll be measured back to you. So when he uses this phrase, and I want you to pay attention because there's two things I want to point out that this little story is telling, because again, this happens to be the meat, the core, the centerpiece of this whole book. So he says, when he came to the coast, that's the portion or the allotment of Caesarea Philippi, and that just simply means a temporal or personal claims of reality. Do you understand? I hope you're understanding what I'm saying about this word Caesarea Philippi. It's like if you, from your temporal, carnal mind, determine what reality is, you could really determine something upon yourself in a very sad situation. Oh, well, I'm going to leave that alone. I hope that you get that. If you don't, you can ask me what I meant. Then he asked his disciples, said, whom do men say that I, pay attention to what he says, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, I, the Son of Man. I want to spell this for you in Hebrew. Bin. Or ben. That's how we would say it. In Hebrew, it's bin. Or ben. And that's pretty much how you would interpret the name Son. Or we would... ben. And I'm doing this because this is... In Hebrew, this is number two. And the non, let's see, how do I do the non? There's two different ways you can do a non. That's value 700. So this would equal bait, final non. That's how you would spell this word in Hebrew, ben. Now, the reason I put that up there is simply because the letters, the Hebrew alphabet, is a letter of codes and formulas. And if you don't understand the code and the formula, you won't understand what he's being saying, what he's saying. And this right here is the same word. This is B-A-Y-T, or we would call it Beth, B-E-T-H, Beth, Bait, Bait, or Beth, Hebrew number two. And it actually simply means to be a container. And so everything that is in this physical world is a container of something. It tells you in Psalms that even the rocks will cry out if you don't praise God. Well, how can a rock cry out unless the rock contains something? So the rock actually is a beth or a bait. It's a container. Everything in the earth is a container. A tree, a plant, a grass, an insect. And what does it contain? It contains this Hebrew glyph, the Aleph. And the Aleph is number one, or you could say God. And the reason I would say that is God can be called source, God can be called life, God can be called energy. There's so many different names that we could call God other than an old gray-headed man. Old gray-headed man doesn't give you a very good picture. That's a very, very limited view of God. Because God is everywhere and nowhere all at the same time. And that's difficult. We can't hardly grasp that. It's hard for us to put our mind around it. So to say, I leave God is limited in our perspective. Okay? Because God is unlimited. So this energy we call God deposits itself in everything that is. And I'll leave it. Okay. So he says right here, who do they say that I, this is Jesus, the story of Jesus, I, the Son of Man, am. And so if I were to put that in another sign, I'm going to do it this way. And let me just do it in black so that way you can see it better. Now, you've seen me do this many times, but let me do it. Now, that's not difficult, is it? You can see what that is, can't you? That's a child. There's several things about this baby, this infant. This is an infant. And I say he's in his mother's womb, okay? And the reason I say he's in his mother's womb is because that's where that you're formed. You're formed in your mother's womb. And so if I were to, and I hung it on the cross, the reason I hung it on the cross is because wasn't that where the Son of Man was hung? Right?
Yes.
Yeah, he was hung on the cross. And the reason I did that is because it's the cross of the astrological signs. It's hard for us to understand that simply because, again, we have to deal with this problem that we face, and that is we've had so much removed from us that we do not know how to think in signs and symbols. And so let me move on here because I want to point out something that creates questions. And so what I would like to say that I would try to do is create more questions than I would give answers. In other words, when I get finished, I hope that you have a lot more questions than you have answers. Because I would feel that I have not done my job if all I did is give you an answer. I want to create a question. Because until we ask the question, until we ask for a question, you have to ask the question from your gut, from your heart, then God will begin to give you an answer. The answers begin to come after the questions are asked. What we do is we take kids to school and then we try to shove knowledge in them without them asking a question. And until you ask a question, you really don't want to know. You can have information pushed at you, but if you don't want to know what that information is about, it will just go on your like water off a duck's back. People go to church every Sunday morning and don't ever get anything. Why? Because there hasn't been an atmosphere to create a platform to ask the question. Because we have to ask the question. And when we ask the question, God is ready there to give us the answer. And it's like a student, until the student really asks the teacher a question, the student's not ready to learn. But when they get ready to ask the questions, now they're ready to learn. So what I want to do is create questions, scenarios that cause us to ask the question. And I hope that this is a scenario because this should be basic 101. But it's not. It really isn't. If you go to an astrological chart, a farmer's almanac understands what I just put on the board here as a child or a son or a person in the womb of a mama. This is the symbol of the signs in the heavens. And all of these signs are perfect the way they're put there, because if you put this sign right here, Aries, the ram, which would be right here, the top of the head, and it's referring to your cerebrum, and then you put Taurus, which is the bull, and it's always referring to this part of you, your lower stiff neck. That's what God called Israel, stiff neck, Taurus. And so, and then you have Gemini. You have the twins, the arms. The arms are always your twins. Then you have Cancer, which are the lungs. You know, and then you have Leo, which is the heart that's in the lungs, and then you have Virgo, which is the belly or the womb. I mean, you know, it's not by accident that you could do this with all of the signs as you come around. It's not by accident that it says Satan will be put under the foot. I mean, all of these things that are in Scripture aren't there just because they accidentally blend. They're there by divine design and purpose. And if we could understand that design and that purpose, then we would have a greater understanding of what it's referring to. So when we come to Libra, the scales of justice, we would understand the scales of justice the pelvic bone from which your two legs come from. And we, if we can understand, this is where the judgment of God is at. The judgment of God is in that place of balance. And if you don't have balance, you can't walk, right? Yeah, I mean, if you get out of balance, right? And that's why when it talks about drunkard, you can't walk straight. You understand? You sleep, you walk into the wall, etc. Things like that. So let me read on. I'm really getting sidetracked here. Verse 14, and they said, some say that you are John the Baptist, some say Elias, and others Jeremiah, and one of the prophets. He said unto them, but who do you say that I am? Then Simon Peter answered and he said, you're the Christ. Now watch this. He said, you are the Christ. It's the word Christ in the Greek is the word Christos. Christos, and actually the word means oil. And most of us are familiar with that. Most people realize that. It's not a personal pronoun. It's not a person's name. That's what I'm trying to say. And we don't know that. There's not, you can say Christ and everybody in the world, whether they're Buddhist or Hindu or Muslim, Jew, Christian, if you said Christ, you know what every one of them says, they think? Jesus. It's not a personal pronoun. It's not a name. It's not the name of a person. Christos, Christ, is the oil, and it's the oil that proceeds in the body from a particular gland in the body. And they understood that. They understood this. And Peter, he's understanding what's happening. He's seeing what's happening. And then notice what he says. He says, you're the Son of the living God. Now, I just got through right here. Jesus said, I'm the Son of Man. Jesus never, ever claimed to be the Son of God. Never. 32 times here in the book of Matthew alone, he said, I'm the Son of Man. Here, Peter is making a proclamation saying, no, you're the Son of God. And so right here we have a different name. Instead of Ben, we have Bar in Hebrew. And so now we have this correlation of letters, number 2, and Rash, number 200. And so I want to play on this one right here, Bar. It's the same word, and here's what the word both bin or bar means. It means child. Not just son. So, in other words, if you had a daughter, did you have a bin and or a bar? Yes. Why? Because it's a child of God. And you have to grasp that and understand, because we put all the emphasis on son, S-O-N, or in other words, man, M-A-N, or male, M-A-L-E. And when we do that, we exclude a great part of our being. Do you follow what I'm saying? And also, you begin to have, we use that as a foundation to build our religion on. The male is more important, right, Terry? Yes. But if we took this and we begin to look at the Hebrew on it, and we begin to see, it's referring to a child. So in Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2, when it's talking about Adam, could it have been talking about a woman? The answer is absolutely yes. But we don't think that, because we think, again, Adam is the name of a man, of the first man. But no, that's not at all what Genesis 1, 2, and 3 is about. It's about the child, or the offspring of God, as an entity that has the soul or the aspect of God to think, to move, to talk, to communicate. It makes it, and I'll show you that in just a minute, and you'll begin to see, because it's a part of getting that first 5, 6, 7 minutes of the movie and not being lost in the rest of the movie. When you get those first 5 or 6 or 7 minutes of the movie, you say, oh, okay, the movie begins to make more sense. And it's based off this word right here, bar. Bar. Which actually in Hebrew means child. But it's more than just child because of the way it's spelled. It's spelled with the Beth and a Rash as opposed to a Beth and a Non. This one, spelled with a Non, gives it contrast, gives it so much ability of contrast. This one with the Rash is exalting the Beth itself back to a cosmic or back to its spiritual level of being. And that's how God started you out. In other words, God started you out with that, but we would call it my spirit or my spirit. It's actually God's spirit. And then he goes on, and let me read on a little further. Verse 17, and Jesus answered and he said unto him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jona, flesh and blood did not reveal this unto you, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say unto you, see, so much that's said right here, if we would understand the signs that are given to us at the very beginning. And that's a key thing, to understand those signs. Well, I'll point them out to you in just a minute. I'll point the signs out and you can do what you need to with them. So he said, verse 18, that I say unto you that you are Peter, and upon this rock, that rock was the revelation, or it was the understanding that Peter had gained. He said, my Father showed this to you. Isn't that right? And so he said, on this is what I'm going to, the word build, actually it just simply, it's the Greek word, just means I'm going to confirm. I'm going to confirm myself to you off this understanding, off this revelation of knowledge that you get. He said, I'm going to build my church. Now, we really done tremendous damage with that word church. Church comes from the Greek word ek, ek, or ex, ex. And it means the place of origination. The place of origination. It means the source. That's what that word, that's what those two words, ek or ex, means in Greek. So the word for church is ek, klesio, or ex, kleo. It's two words. It's not one word. It's two words. And so ek means place or source or origin. It's origination. In other words, where did it come from? It's original source of power. And then the word kleo, or klesia, K-L-A-E-O, kleo or klesia, actually means word, W-O-R-D, or spoken or speaking ability. And your ability to speak. Now you never ever in church have ever heard that definition. But that's the definition of the word ekklesia. It means the source or the origin or the place from which words proceed, or where words go forth as a command. And when we can understand that that place, that source or that origin from which words come forth and they command, they're like seeds, because words are things. Words become things. Words create. Matter of fact, go to the book of Proverbs. It tells you in the book of Proverbs, it's by your words you're justified, by your words you're condemned. It says life and death's in the power of the tongue, etc., etc., etc. Now we have to grasp that. It doesn't matter if you're speaking Chinese or if you're speaking English or if you're speaking Spanish. It really doesn't matter the languages you're speaking. It's the content and the intent that comes from the gut, from where the source or the origin of the word came from. It's creative. It's very creative. And so we have to come back to realize that this has to be something that we learn by words. Words begin to build. Words begin to destroy. Words tear down. Words build up. So, and we these are things that we pay very little attention to. Now, told you all that. Sorry I belabored that so much, but it's very important that we could understand that, simply because we are built from this energy system, this astrological energy system. Go with me to Genesis chapter 1, and I'll read something to you that you know, that I use it a lot. Psalms chapter 19, verse 1, it says, the heavens declare. And the word heavens is the Hebrew word shamayim. Shamayim, S-H-A-M-Y-M. Shamayim. And this is a word that has, I'll do the two Hebrew glyphs. It has a yod between two mems, which is right here. S-H-A-M, Sham, Ma, Shama, S-H-A, Shama, M-Y, M. It has a yod between two mems. And you remember in Genesis 1, well, let me just read it to you right here. And I'm going to come back and read Psalms 19. Genesis right here in 1:6, it says, "And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters." Everybody say the middle of the waters. Middle of the waters. You see, this is a mem, and this is a mem. And the mem is the number 40 in Hebrew. And it means water. It means material. Actually, if you look up the word Moshe, Moses, Moses' name means drawn up out of water. If you look at the story of Noah, Noah and his ark, or his boat, his the same thing, ark or boat, is the same thing as the seven rainbows. These are the seven rainbows right here. This is the seven golden candlestick. These are the 7 days of creation. And when I say seven, I'm talking about the same thing. This is the seven golden candlestick. It's all saying the same thing, using different words and different stories to say the same thing. God's saying the same thing, just saying it in many different ways. So here's your golden menorah, 7 golden candlestick. These are your 7 days of creation. This is the physical body, the yom, that living entity that God built. It's all right here in this chart, this sign. If you read that sign, you can begin to read that sign and say, oh, that's me. Because the Bible is a book about you. It's a book about me. It's a book about us. So here he says in Genesis 1:6, "And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so." Now, the two different mems that's used in the word heaven, the Hebrew word for heaven, is shamayim. And the two different mems in this word refer to two different aspects of your being. One of those aspects of your being is spirit, which is eternal. The other aspect of your being is temporal, which is your physical body. And what the question George asked has to do with the merging of the two, because they are separate entities, but they're one. So they're actually, there's two of you, but they're just one of you. And it's hard for us to get that picture and to get it's hard to get it clear, because we can't grasp this two in one concept. The idea that there is a duality, because duality doesn't necessarily mean it's divided. That's can you get that? Just because it's dual don't mean it's divided. It can be, in most cases it is. But it shouldn't be. It should be unified. It should be working under its unified effort. So now then, I said all of that to say this in verse 1 of Genesis chapter 1. But let me read this. I said I wanted to read this. Psalms 19 says, "The heavens declare." Heavens is the Hebrew word Shamayim, and it refers to the waters above, the waters above, the waters below. The waters above are referring to this Hebrew mem, which has a value of 600, and this Hebrew mem, which has a value of 40. This one is material, this one is spiritual. And if that ever goes off inside you and you ask the question, you begin to see that you'll understand Adam in a different way. This, because Adam is spelled Aleph Delete Mem or Aleph Delete Mem. It can be spelled both ways. Looks the same. Unless you spell it in Hebrew. And then it's different. So when Psalms 19 says the heavens declare, it means the heavens are constantly projecting their energy. They're constantly speaking. The source where words come from, they're coming from the heavens. Their words are constantly speaking to the earth. In other words, it's God speaking to the earth constantly. The heavens declare the glory of God. They're constantly talking about the wonder of God's miracle. So in Genesis 1:1, it says, "In the beginning God created." Okay, let me sum that up to say it this way. In Hebrew, it's Bereshit. That one word is in the beginning. Okay? So let's everybody just play this game with me. Just say Bereshit. 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 Everybody say it. Bereshit. That means in the beginning. Three words. In the beginning. Elohim. Elohim. Say that. Elohim. Elohim. Okay, this is Elohim right here. It's the word for gods, G-O-D-S. It actually means the God of seven. The gods of seven. It means the God of seven powers. It's that which creates the torso of the human body. So, Bereshit, and then in Hebrew, it's like Spanish. Remember, a lot of times Spanish and English, Spanish will say something first, and then in English we'll say it last. Like in Hebrew, it says, Bereshit bara Elohim. But in English, it says, in the beginning, God created. Well, in Hebrew, it would say, in the beginning, created God. Do you follow what I just did? Bara actually comes in Hebrew before Elohim, if you're looking at it from a sentence. And the word bara is bar, son or child of Aleph. So it's called B-A-R-A, Bara. So it actually means Bar, the son of Aleph. That's what Matthew was referring to when Matthew said, that's who that you say I am, Peter. Why? Because God gave him the understanding of who he was as the child of this energy system that we call God. So when you get the beginning of the foundation right, then the rest of the story begins to fall in place. So Genesis chapter 1 is a overall picture. It's like a 5 or 7 minute segment in the beginning of the movie that actually climaxes at the end of the movie. So Genesis chapter 1 begins to say, here's how God functions in the earth. And the way God does that is God begins to appear as grass. It's what it tells you in verse 9, 10, 11. Grass, herbs, plants. And then it begins to show you how God also appears as trees. And then it shows you how God appears as animals. And then it shows you how God appears as flying objects, birds, fowl. And then all of a sudden it climaxes and says, and here's how God appears as man. And then Genesis chapter 2 begins to give you the ingredients of how that works. And that's where the story plot we lose. Genesis 1 gives you a synopsis, an overall picture of the whole of the thing. That source is what's behind every bit of it, whether it's an animal, whether it's a fowl, whether it's a tree, whether it's an insect, whether it's a grass, a blade of grass. Can God be in a blade of grass? It's the only thing in the world that makes it grow. We say, well, sun and water makes it grow. Sun and water and earth are ingredients, but what's in it that make it really grow? God. So Genesis 1 begins to give us this this broad picture. And then Genesis chapter 2 begins to show us the diagram. It's almost like you would think it's backwards. It's not. I remember years ago, Gary Tice, who passed he passed on and graduated here a few years back, and he used to come here all the time, and he would say, "Lynn, I know that you know some things that you're just not telling us." And I'd say, "Well, Gary, that's probably true because you're just not ready to hear it. When you're ready to hear it, then it'll be told to you." It just works that way. And so Gary and Chris come to church here for 20 years, and still, Chris still comes. She's like the rest of the crowd. Just intermittent whenever they can. Anyway, I forgot what I was going to tell you about what Gary was constantly asking me, or Gary was constantly saying to me. The understanding of Genesis 1, 2, and 3, when you begin to grasp that, you begin to get a picture of how God works in the earth, but not just in the earth, but in you, in me. And as I begin to understand how God works in me, then I begin to have a better picture of how I can live and move and have my being. For instance, Genesis chapter 2 starts out with the introduction of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. And Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, I just draw it over here, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh are four formulas that deal with carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen, which creates everything in the earth. Everything in the earth is created from carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen, and with a special other ingredient, which would be God, essence. So when you quintessence, you press that into it, quintessence, you can create a blade of grass. And I had a lady at the shop, she was asking me some questions, and I just told her an answer, and boy, she didn't like the answer. But I said, the Hebrew just says it this way. I said, the Hebrew for the Sabbath actually means peace and freedom. I said, it hadn't got anything to do with a day of the week. Oh, she went off. Oh, then I guess you think that God is in a tree. I said, well, how else can a tree live? Oh, then you do think God's in a tree. She got really excited. I said, yeah, how is it alive? Oh, not my God. My God is a man. I said, okay. People get real upset. But when you begin to see how the blueprint is made, because Genesis 2 describes the blueprint of the physical body, which is the temple of the essence or origin or source of all. So in Genesis 2, when you have the tree of life, the heart, Leo, the tree of life, doesn't it tell you in Leviticus that the life of everything is where? Where does it say it's at? In the blood? Isn't that what it said? So when you understand the tree of life is this little organ here that pumps blood throughout your whole body, and if you look at it on a big diagram, you would see that it looks like a root system and a limb system with a trunk system, the heart. And then you have the tree of Tov and Ra, which is actually good and beautiful. And it also has a vein, because connected to your brain, right here, this is where your Aries, your brain, your upper brain, connected to your brain is also a nervous system that goes throughout your whole body. And you can't move and function without that, can you? And if you notice, when you come right out of Genesis chapter 2 into verse 10, 11, 12, then it talks about four rivers. And if you go over to the Middle East, you can't find these four rivers because they don't exist. There's one of them they found, Euphrates. But yet when you go into these four rivers, then you begin to realize that these four rivers are symbolic, and they represent four different fluids that flow through the body. And when I'm talking about fluids, I'm talking about oils. You have, and so all four of those rivers refer to the four different fluids that flow through the physical body. One of them is blood. And you know that. Another one is urine. You know that. Another one is your saliva. And you know that. And another one is the fluids or the liquids, the oils that carry and secrete your whole nerve system. And you know that. So you have four rivers flowing in your physical body. So you have a beautiful diagram here of how this thing works. And then in chapter 2, you get down to verse 18, 19, you have an helpmate, which actually just simply means you have a reflected aura system about you, which is given to you. It's God innate given to you. This makes you, if you understand what I'm saying, it makes you the bar-ah. God created. What he offspringed himself. He cloned himself. How did he do that? In his child, which is you and me. So, I know what I would be saying is so different than what we have all been taught or what we've all been taught to think. Then in Genesis chapter 3, after you've gotten through the intricate workings of how the physical body is put together, and you can go on YouTube now and Google the seed. I think there's several different YouTubes about this. I've seen several different ones where the seed cracks the egg and the embryo begins to form. I mean, it's phenomenal to see that. If you go on and Google that, you'll see that. And what it does, if you begin to think about what I'm saying, you'll see this come alive. You'll see it just begin to unfold in front of your eyes. You'll begin to see how God created his tabernacle, his tent, his dwelling place. And it became you. And then Genesis chapter 3 begins to talk about the nachesh. And yet we, that's the Hebrew word that's translated for serpent. But in ancient mythology, the serpent meant that which was able to renew itself. But we translated it to mean snake, that we're all afraid of. And so, Joe hangs out at the shop a lot. And so he come to the shop, he said, he handed me his hoe, and he said, "Brother Lynn, could you sharpen my hoe?" I said, "Man, Joe, you really tore it all to pieces." And he said, "Yeah." He said, I beat this snake to death. I killed it. I hit it in the ground. I beat it 600 times with my hoe." And he did. He beat his hoe all to pieces. And he said, "You got to come see that snake." He said, "That thing is 7 foot tall." And I went up there and I looked at it. It was a big old, it was 7 foot long. Big old black snake. And I said, "Joe, do you realize what you just done? You killed your friend." "Oh, it's a snake." I said, "No, a black snake is the kind of friend you want, because a black snake will kill a poison snake." I said, "And it cuts down on the rat population and the mice population." I said, "Things that are pestilence to you, that big old black snake would take care of them for you." But because it's a snake, everybody in here now, every one of you have been taught to be afraid of a snake, right? And I remember when I was little, my oldest brother, Richard, he was really braver than the rest of us. But you can catch a black snake, and you can pet it for just a minute, and it'll be tame. And it won't hurt you. It won't bite you. It won't do anything to you. And I remember me and Richard was in the woods, and we come up on a great big old black snake. And we caught it and petted it on the back of its head, you know, just and tamed it. And then Richard wrapped it around his neck, and we went home with that big old black snake wrapped around his neck, you know. And we walked in the house, and I mean, Mother went through the roof. She had a fit. And of course, she made us take it back out and turn it loose. But why are we so afraid of a serpent, a snake? Because of religion. Because religion has taught us to be afraid. You're not afraid of your household pet, your kitten, or your dog, but not a snake. Not, Why? Because of Genesis chapter 3. Yet the Hebrew word nachesh, now hear this, nachesh in the Hebrew actually means your ability to learn or your ability to discern through experience and through intuition. So the nachesh actually works with this energy system that comes from the tree of Tov and Ra. Now, we didn't know that. Nobody never told you that, did they? So when you start to understand that this, the way this serpent works, and notice what it says, if you will, in Genesis chapter 3, and I'll just unhook here. It says in verse 5, and God knows that in the day that you eat, your eyes will be open, and you will be as gods, knowing. Now let me ask you a question. Did God create you so that you wouldn't open your eyes and so that you'd never know? Well, religion told you that he did. Religion told you that's a bad thing. That you'd be like God. Well, didn't it tell you in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, that God created you to be like God? Didn't he? I made you as my image. Why? To be like me. To walk like me. To talk like me. To be like me. And here, when we begin to see the intricacy of how this thing is put together and works, and it says, hey, you're going to get your eyes open, and you're going to know. And you know what we said? Uh-uh, not me. I refuse that. You know, we do it. I hex you, Satan. No way. And yet, the very book that we think we know, that we don't know, simply because we just don't pay attention. Because we don't get that first 5 minute segment. If we can ever get that 5 minute segment, if we can ever get that picture and realize, oh, this is what it's talking about. And remove ourselves from this whole religious facade that we've been taught for 1700 years. We begin to realize, hey, I'm a mighty creator too. I can create my world and I can destroy my world. And I do. Amen. I'll quit right there.
I heard you last week. You were talking to somebody. I believe it might have been John. But I heard you say something. That was the big thing. And I was thinking, okay, what is he saying was the big thing?
Let me think. How did John asked me a question last week in a statement that he had made, and it had something to do with like what George just said about duality. And when I answered John's question and John's statement, I said when the seed penetrated the egg and creation began to unfold, that's the Big Bang. So the Big Bang theory is true. And then that's how it's true. But that doesn't just take place in the physical form. It takes place in the blade of grass. It takes place in the tree. See, when that tree seed falls in the ground, the Big Bang happens. It takes place in an animal, the same way if an animal seeds the female. That's what I meant when I said the Big Bang.
I just heard that and I was wanting to ask you last week if not but anyway, I heard you say that and I was wondering what y'all were actually talking about and at what point.
Well, you know, when you hear the word the Big Bang, you're going to think of Einstein and his Big Bang theory. But I believe Einstein was obviously a brilliant, brilliant man, a brilliant scientist. And I think that maybe religion and the church gave him a lot worse name than he should have been given. I really believe that Einstein knew God, but he knew God differently than how the religious community or the church tries to describe God. He knew God as a energy that taught him things. When he would get quiet, I mean, you know, Einstein talked about in his silence that things would be revealed to him. I think that's true with anybody. And what happens in your silence is when you really are in communication with God.
Yesterday I got upset a little bit. And I just, you know, I was in the shower and I just was fixing to dry. And I just put the towel in the palms of my hand into my eyes like this, just, you know, real tight. And then all of a sudden these lights started coming up, showing lights in my eyes. Then it started, I went, wow. You know, calm me down. I said, wow, the lights, the different colors, and it started showing forms of leaves and oak leaves and all kind of different kind of leaves. And it was like a kaleidoscope, and it was spinning, spinning around, and it just automatically calmed, give me a peace and a calm where I had done it and started seeing all the colors inside. And it looked actually like you would take a kaleidoscope and look around like this. It was showing all these different things. That's up there shows you've got light on the inside. And all I had to do was just concentrate on that light. And first it started out with little purple dots, like it was just little tiny, little bitty specks of light. And it started going out into green leaves and yellow and all the different colors of the rainbow. It was just totally amazing. But next time you get in a tears, just do that.
You can do the same thing through meditation, just closing your eyes and breathing and really paying attention to your breath. And sometimes it can happen quick, sometimes it might take you a while.
I told the kids to do that last night, the two girls, because it was kind of dark in the room they were in. And I said, it's because your eyes haven't adjusted yet. But once your eyes adjust to that dark, you will start seeing the other light places in the house and stuff. And then I said, I want to do their eyes like this, you know, and they would start seeing the light that's inside of them. And Paige back there started seeing shapes of Texas and all this. I said, okay. I mean, that's just weird. But she said, that's what's in my mind. And I said, okay, that's what's in your mind. And she was seeing different states and all this, and there's no telling what goes on in kids' minds, but anyway, she started seeing shapes. I started seeing leaves, she was seeing shapes of stage, you know.
Well, meditation is the best, I don't say it's the only, but I say meditation is the best source of connection to the source that there is, meditation. And when I'm talking about meditation, what I'm talking about is just a breathing exercise that you practice sitting still, sitting quiet with your eyes closed, where you inhale through your nose and you exhale through your mouth, and then you try to pay attention to your breathing so that you get to a place you're thinking nothing. That's a discipline that I feel that the church has completely lost and don't know anything about, because they would think that's Eastern religion or some kind of practice that they shouldn't do. But when Jesus said, he made a phrase, he said, watch and pray. And I remember 35 years ago, I used to preach watch and pray would be where you're watching for Jesus to come back in the eastern sky. And so with that kind of an idea, religious people got to where they were afraid to go to bed at night because they wouldn't be watching Jesus if he come at night. And they wouldn't see him in the eastern sky. They might not get to go with him. Foolishness like that. And people buy off on that. I don't know why people buy that, but people really buy off on that kind of stuff. You know, we can pack this building out if we go back and preach rapture, flying and dying, you know, literalism. But when you begin to take the real practice of meditation, which is quietening your mind, that's when God speaks to you. And you may not have, you may, if you take a 15-minute session of meditation where you just sit still and you're quiet and you're paying attention to your breathing and you think that nobody said anything, you go away, maybe an hour later, you have a most phenomenal revelation or a tremendous thought, or this just comes to you, and it does all throughout the day. All great men practice meditation. There's just hardly none that didn't. All of them practice meditation. The art of stilling the mind through breathing, through the exercise of breathing. And I like to say that with every inhalation through the nose, every time you speak or you inhale, that is the Hebrew ruach, which is the word for spirit. That every time you inhale, God said something. Could have only been one character of a Hebrew glib. God said something when I did that. And so when I exhale, I release whatever is in me foreign to whatever God said, I let it go. If I practice that, and I do that, and I let it go, you can't do that for 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 minutes and not feel great. You can't. I mean, you'll feel great. And you won't know, the more you practice it, the more you do it, the longer you practice it, the more God speaks. So, and you also see colors. Many times in your breathing exercise with your eyes closed, you may just see one particular color. And it will always be these colors. It will always be the 7 basic colors of the rainbow. Because these are the colors. And also, if you will Google this on YouTube, as the seed cracks the embryo, it's actually in color. It shows you the organs in different colors. Because your body, in turn, is this what color? It's this what? So, you see colors.
Okay, what does the trial actually make? I mean, so it's references to Jesus. I never quite felt it exactly that way, but I've always been drawn to, like, I put trials in my yard to be, well, not a big one, but anyway. Yeah, I enjoy looking at it, but what does it mean? I mean,
the cross. Have you ever gone in an old church and seen the mosaics?
Absolutely.
Okay, if I said mosaics, then all of a sudden, what do you think of? You think of the artistry, the colored stained glass windows or whatever. If you will look in every one of them and look at every one of them, period, bar none, are all astrological. They're all based on these astrological signs. And you would say, well, they have different characters in them. Absolutely, because different characters represent different aspects of the astrological signs. So any cathedral or any church, you can go on Google and look at it. Every one of them are astrological, and they will have the astrological signs and glyphs hid in them, because everyone who knew how to draw and how to construct the mosaics knew that they were astrological. They knew that the root behind it all was the cardinal cross, which is the cardinal cross, which here's what it symbolizes. It symbolizes as above, so below, and it's fleshed out on the physical plane of the horizon. And if you can ever get this, and Jesus said in Luke's gospel, he said, take up your cross daily. And we translated that time for it to mean burden. You know, they're not one person on the earth, well, they are a few. There's a few radical Christians that'll take a piece of wood that looks like a cross and strap it to the back and walk around. Few radical people do that. But they only usually do it if they want to protest or march or get somebody to see them. So basically, it's show vainglory. But when Jesus is talking about your take up your cross daily, what is he referring to? He's talking about every one of you were born at some time
in this wheel, this cross. And so I was born right here. I was born on this cup. I was born between Aquarius and Pisces, right here, February the 19th. That's exactly where this falls. So then I have attributes of both of these signs. Connie's born right here, December the 25th, Capricorn. So she has the attributes of this sign. George is born right in here. Let's see, George, aren't you? You're Cancer, aren't you?
July 13th.
Yeah. This is July 21st. George is born right here. So he would carry some of the first three decans of Leo, but he's strongly Cancerian with the last three. Each
would
one.
You go backwards. He'd go backwards, right? He wouldn't carry Leo.
Yeah, he would.
He's already born.
Yeah, he would carry it because he's July the 11th.
So then you go backwards.
Yeah, he would carry the first. He would carry the first 10 decans. Each one of these are divided into sections of three. Three decans. Every one of them has three decans representing 30 days, 10 days each decan. And so where you fit in that place, I mean, there's just so much to this, and you begin to understand your chart and who you are, where you fit, and the energies that you carry. It will help you define yourself. If you don't know yourself.
Did you recognize a horoscope in the newspaper?
Do I recognize it? Or are you saying? Oh, it carries a lot of truth in it. How do you think the weather predicts? How do you think the prognosticators predict the weather a year, 5 years in advance? They do it by astrological charts.
Very good chart.
They know exactly how the movement of the sun, the moon, and the stars are, and its effect on the earth. So they can tell you in advance what the weather is. All you have to do is get a farmer's almanac. And I promise you, it won't miss it much.
Yes, sir.
It's pretty accurate. My grandfather didn't go fishing without looking at the almanac.
Absolutely.
He didn't go hunting without looking at the almanac, and he sure did not plant anything without looking at the almanac. Why? Because they understood. Well, those are not just signs. That's God in motion. That's God as source and energy. And you know, when you understand that. So the cross, the cardinal cross.
Should you sign the cross representing God?
Yes. Yeah, the cross represents God. You can see this. See if I can do it this way. I'll show you three crosses.